Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this week's Aotearoa Rugby Pod. You're joined with myself, James Parsons, and down south, Bryn Hall. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Good. Very good.
We're missing our mate, Ross Carr, this week. He can't be with us, so we're taking the toy for a spin, just you and me.
Look, mate, you're running the cutter beautifully just to start with, mate, so I'm excited. Look, I'm excited.
Oh, mate, I'm not sure about that, but we'll get stuck into it. We'll go to the biggest talking point in the Canes versus Brumbies. We always knew it's a hard place to go. I probably wasn't expecting the Canes to lose. But your original thoughts after watching that game?
Yeah, I thought it was an arm wrestle. It was a real arm wrestle in... You know, we've talked about a lot around New Zealand teams going to different environments and playing in Australia, and I think the Brumbies in Canberra, as you know, it's a real tough place to play, and you know, that kind of home advantage and being in Canberra was really different, and I thought it was a real big arm wrestle. I think, you know, the stats showed that everything was pretty even around all the major stats, and it kind of symbolised that with the score, and you know, probably discipline a little bit hurt the Hurricanes, but. You know, Geordie had that opportunity twice, one at halfway, and then, you know, right on the bang full-time with the Brumbies trying to shut it out, and had the opportunity to win it. So he showed plenty of times that he's kicked it before, but, you know, sometimes as a kicker, yeah, you miss a couple, and I guess fortunately for the Brumbies, he missed. But, yeah, I thought it was a real big arm wrestle and real physical, and, you know, thought it was actually real deserving of how close that scoreline was.
Yeah, and I suppose for me, when I was watching it, it showed... I mean, the Contes talked about the Brumbies having a big defensive effort, but they actually tackled at 78%. And you know, we sort of saw the Canes in previous week. They were quite ruthless on attack, and they just were a little bit off. And I suppose a couple of examples of that were they gave away penalties in their attacking 22 a couple of times for shepherding. Another time they didn't release the ball before... You know, they kept going, and, you know, normally in the past weeks they've been ruthless in that 22 and come away with points. I think they went to the corner as well, and the Brumbies contested and stole a line out. And then when they, I think late in the second half or around that 50-minute mark, they went to the corner again, and the Brumbies defended and pushed that maul out. So they had plenty of opportunities to, I suppose, take the game away from the Brumbies. Through their own inaccuracies, I'd say, rather than the Brumbies defending really well, they didn't quite execute as ruthlessly in past weeks that put them in a position for a finals berth.
Yeah, exactly. I think you know, looking at some of the stats that we had here, you know, that obviously tackling at 70 odd percent, it's, you know, it's not great, but I think you are right. I think probably in the past couple of weeks, the Hurricanes' face play shape and the execution's been really on point. And I think on the weekend, you know, they missed a few opportunities due to those execution errors, and, you know, probably reflects the score with only being 2 tries scored. So, yeah, and like I said, I think we've talked about it, you know, playing in a different spot is a little bit different. And, you know, the Brumbies at home are always tough, and they were away on tour for the last 3 weeks. And every time, any chance they get a time to be back home, they're going to be a different team. So, but, you know, I thought Tom Banks was massive for them as well. You know, I thought he was great. He had 102 metres off 12 carries and was really potent and looked like really injecting himself into the line. So, yeah, there were a lot of opportunities, but I think coming back to your point, mate, very similar to us, actually, execution was a big thing for us. And I think they just got that a little bit wrong, a little bit of ill discipline. And even with that, not playing how they have in the last probably fortnight, they still had a chance to win that game. And you know, if Geordie kicks that goal at the end, then you know they're probably still in the hunt for a finals berth.
They've got another home game this week, and it's pretty crucial. Obviously, that they've sent a message that it's going to be a big challenge to go to Canberra and get a result. It's probably going to be a crucial game in terms of where things finish now that the Hurricanes have lost. Crucial in terms of who gets that finals berth. The Highlanders are going there. The shot across the bow has been sent. They won't be going there expecting an easy go. But from what you saw of the Highlanders versus the Waratahs, do they have enough in them to go there and get a bonus point?
I think they do. They've definitely got opportunities to score points. Like, you look at their game on the weekend, points isn't going to be an issue. And I think they have talked around how the Highlanders do play, and they've got the ability, you know, where we know that tempo is a massive thing for them, and being able to get quick recycling ball and getting Aaron to get that ball out is going to be a massive plus for them. So winning that collision battle and contact battle is going to be massive for them. And you know, obviously with Shannon Frizzell being out, it's going to hurt them a little bit. But you know, they've got some great depth with Jimeno there, and you know, possibly bringing in some other people. But they definitely do, and they do have a great kicking game as well. I think the growth that, you know, Mitchell Hunt has had around, whether they be attacking kicks or plugging it into their 22 and then building pressure like that, I think is going to be massive for them, depending on what the weather might be like in Canberra. It could be cold, it could be dewy. And having that backup plan with being able to plug people down in their half with attacking kicks, contestables, or even just plugging it long, they've got the ability to do that, to build pressure from that. And then their set piece as well. Whenever they get into that 22 zone, they're pretty lethal around. The faceplate shape that they have around Nuggie, they've got a great line-out drive that they've scored a lot off during this Trans-Tasman competition, and then they've also got the specials that they have around the front as well. So they've got a lot in their arsenal. But I think, again, it's going to come down to execution, which you know, the Hurricanes probably missed out on the weekend, and we even missed out as well. So if they can do that, then they give themselves the greatest opportunity to have bonus point, to win by a bonus point.
Now, a guy for me in the Highlanders that has sort of found his home at 13, and it started when he had the victory against you guys up in Christchurch, is Michael Collins. And his game's gone from strength to strength. Are you seeing that when you're watching the games, that since he's gone to 13, the Highlanders' performances have improved as well?
Yeah, it has. And I think you've had a lot of time to do with Mike, and we've played him a lot of times. And the biggest asset that he has is that he's a great communicator and has a pretty good understanding game management-wise around how you play rugby. And so as an inside back, you know, as an outside centre, or even if you're a 12 as well, having the ability to be able to communicate inside what the space is in front of you or outside you is really, really important for that cog in that wheel. And so, you know, Michael's doing that really, really well. You see on the field, he's pointing defensively, defensively who's got who, and gives real confidence in that defense. And then on the attacking wise, you can see the ability of Huntsy and, you know, or Ioane or Gregory, who I think has been really, a really good, solid performer. And I think the positive that I've had and had a look at my notes is that the continuity that those two have had. So as a combination, spending more time with each other, you can see Gregory and Collins are actually playing really nicely together. And, you know, that comes back to, you know, Mike, who's had a lot of experience, you know, at Super Rugby level, at Mighty 10 Cup level. And so he's got a pretty good understanding of what it takes to be a centre. And so, you know, I've loved that, and his ability on attack as well. He's done some great support lines. You look at that kick last week when Nuggie did it, the ability to see that space, call it, even though it was probably a pre-called move, having the ability to call that and then be able to score off that has been massive for them. So I've really enjoyed seeing Gregory and Collins together. It's been great for the continuity of that side, and you've probably seen the best performance out of Scott Gregory due to Michael Collins and his ability to make him feel comfortable. And so it's helped Mitchie Hunt and their forward pack as well. When you've got a great communicator like Mike, you've probably got a little bit more understanding around what he is like from the outside. He looks like he's doing that really, really good for that team.
Absolutely. And the thing I noticed, because I was at the game on the weekend, you know, he got an early turnover, he got a try, he got a couple of try assists, but it was what I saw off the ball defensively, like his ability to read when to rush. Like he was that edge, that second to last defender a lot of times, and he's just holding, and then he'd rush and shut things down even when there were overlaps. And it was that ability there to close things off. And then whenever someone was subbed on, he was always communicating, connecting with them, letting them know what the flow of game was, what there was. The new young halfback came on, he was straight up to them, organising. He just looked like he was the connector of everything. He was a real solid leader for the group. I don't know, there was just so much that he was doing that you don't see on TV, that he just came across to me as a big influencer in terms of all the action, but also a big influencer in terms of voice and a connector and leader in the group as well. And he's just had such an outstanding season. And he's got a bit of Welsh blood in him, so, you know. He might be donning the Hadley Parks route if he doesn't get picked up. But we move on to your game, Brynner. You know, talk us through how you felt that one. Obviously, a late try that took a point off you, but in the end, it probably after the Brumbies Canes game, it wasn't too drastic a weekend.
Yeah, obviously at the time, it was pretty deflating. I think, you know, we won, but you could probably sense around the pitches that were shown, we were pretty gutted that we didn't get that bonus point. And fair play to the Force, you know. We knew that going in the week through the prep is that they grind out teams and they don't go away. And we've talked about a lot of that on this podcast, that they're a team that just sticks in there, hangs in there, and makes it really difficult for you. And for us, they did that. And they played to the 80th minute and got that try in the last minute. I guess for us, the biggest thing was probably the first half we executed a lot better. We won the kind of position and territory battle in that first half. And even though we only had six penalties in the first half and three of them in the very first couple of minutes, our discipline and our shape and our attack was really, really good. But then probably in that second half, like some of the stats that we had is that we had nine penalties in the second half. We made 144 tackles and 105 of those tackles were inside our 22. So it was a much different contrast in the second half where we defended a lot of our line due to our ill discipline, which has been a massive disappointing factor for us in this competition and probably the season actually. And then, you know, making 105 tackles in our 22 zone and puts us under a lot of pressure. So, the Force had, the high phase counts. They had 19 phases, 17 phases, 12 phases, 11 phases, 7 phases, where the most that we had in the whole game was 7. So the execution and us not being able to hold onto the ball and our discipline was probably taken away from us due to how brutal they were, the Force were with holding onto the ball. So, coming at the back end of the game was pretty, if you think about it, a strip right at the end was probably fair around how the game went for us. And, the Force scored it at the end and took away that bonus point for us. But those are probably the things that hurt us a little bit. I don't know what you saw, Jip, but I think us being able to be a little bit clunky and wasn't fluid. It was just our execution and our penalties that probably let us down again.
Yeah, look, I thought in the first half there were moments of brilliance and recognising there were some pretty key players sitting in the stands and some young guys getting opportunity for the first time. And I sort of take it back, you reading out those stats, remembering the last time we sort of were on here reading out stats like that, it was a loss against the Chiefs in Hamilton. You know, so you have to acknowledge that there's an improvement and an ability to win a game when you're having those stats is pretty impressive. You know, because I had it written here that the Force's opportunities to win this game, and it was there for the taking. And, you know, they were held up at 55 minutes. 64 to 64 minutes, they were in your 22 for 17 phases, no reward. And then after that, from 64th minute to 67th, they took some penalties and they took the scrum options, eventually knocking the ball on. And then, I think it was 3 to 4 minutes later, that you guys were attacking down in their half. Those opportunities, if they had taken them, it could have turned it around. I think straight after half-time, they had that forward pass try disallowed. Yep. Then they went to the corner and they overthrew the line-out. And after that overthrow, I think you set up Will Jordan beautifully with that pass for a try about 3 minutes later. So I'm just off the back of that. That's five opportunities they were in your 22 to score points, and they didn't come away with any.
And yeah, I think. Sorry.
No, you go.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think defensively, even though you know we made a lot of tackles, I think probably the last fortnight we've actually, if any team's kind of gone over that kind of sixth, seventh phase mark, they've scored points against us. And so the resilience and you know being able to make those defensive tackles and being able to get up again and do that, it was a real positive for us because you're right, the force actually threw a lot at us. They were brutal at the breakdown. They went over multiple phases. And so for us, we needed to be on in that sense. And yes, we did give away penalties at those longer stages. But you are right. They did have a lot of opportunities. And credit to our boys around hanging in there and holding and just trying to grind them out. But yeah, the force they gave us a lot. They threw a lot at us. And look, even that one where Richard Kahui throws that forward pass, you know, if they score that try, then it's a different story. You start trying to think about the game a little bit differently.
Couple of positives for me out of it. Sione Harvili, I think, is becoming a nice little link man. You know, he's had that physical presence, good ball carrier, great defender, but in a couple of times, he was the key link man for two tries, gave the ball to Enor. I thought Enor, you know, giving that little grubber for Mataali's try. You know, great play from Sione to give that ball, but great kick and vision. Enor's obviously been out for a while. He's starting to find some form. And then in the next try, Will Jordan's first try, Sione Harvili again gives a great ball to Lester. And I think Lester Fainuku's time at centre is starting to pay dividends now. He's in the winger. His nice sleight of hands to get that ball away to Jordan. Don't know if we would have seen that had he not had that time at centre. He may have, may not have, but it was just a beautiful, like, soft hands to find that edge. So there are a couple of real nice positives in that first 40. I don't know how you saw that.
Yeah, I think Sione, look, he's been great for us. And I think, you know, Tom Christie last year and the start of this year was in really a rich reign of form and was performing really well for us. And, you know, Sione slotted in really, really, really nicely. I think the biggest thing about Sione is his physicality at the breakdown and his tackles as well. So, you know, we knew that with the force, they go around a lot around the transition, whether it be Bunter plays or sending Kurandrani or Tony Pulu down that channel. And it was a big focus for us around stunting that and slowing down their ball in that first phase because they're pretty strong around that area. And then with Leicester, I think you are right. Having the ability to be able to give those square hands, especially under pressure like he did. You know, Sione gave their ball to Leicester. Leicester held his feet a little bit and gave that pass to Will. And I think probably last year he doesn't give that pass. He just tries to run and didn't have the ability to do that. But I think with spending his time at centre, and it's actually a big thing that he said to himself that he really wants to work on his distribution game, especially being a centre. He's talked around that's been a work on for him. And it was great to see him on the weekend, especially under pressure, giving that flip pass to Will, because when you've got a guy like that and putting him into space, he's going to score like he did on the weekend. So the more time Leicester spends at centre or on the wing and keeps doing those skills, you know, whether it be on a shorter, he might be on a short edge for us. And, you know, it's fixed enough, you know, our last defender to put a guy away on the sideline. It's a thing that Leicester's really improved in and, hopefully does continue to keep growing that. And it's something that he's really wanted to work on probably the last, 3 to 4 weeks.
All right. Well, we know the permutations this week. You need a big score. You're playing the Rebels, wherever it may be, probably Sydney. What's the mindset? Because we've seen how ruthless you can be against the Reds earlier in the year. The big dogs will be coming back. Is there a clear mindset, or is it going to be about earning the right sort of mindset first and foremost?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, Jip. I think, you know, fortunately, it's in our own hands now. And I think, we don't have to really worry about, who needs to lose, who needs to win, or that kind of scenario due to, obviously, the Hurricanes losing on the weekend. It gives us a clear picture that, you know, if we can win and with a bonus point or whatever it may be, we've got an opportunity to do that. And so we're very fortunate as well that the Highlanders will play before us. So we'll know exactly before we go on the field what's required of us, whereas that's a real positive for us. We don't need to go into the game thinking, oh, what do we need to do? What's the situation? How many points? When the Highlanders do play, we'll know exactly what's required of us. And so from there, we'll be able to get a plan. But I think for us, not trying to fall into that helter-skelter kind of mindset, I think having your process around what the week looks like. And so we understand that, you know, you've got to do all the hard work. You know, the whole cliche is around like our forwards doing the right things, us put in the right positions, playing rugby, but, you know, playing within in a structure and plan. And so that's the kind of way we're going to go around it. But I think the fact that we do have it in our own hands and we'll know exactly what's required of us come Saturday afternoon at Leichhardt, that'll be the mindset when we get to that kind of stage there.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be one to be watching and locking in. Move to the Blues-Reds game. Obviously, the Blues had a great win over there and putting themselves in control of their own destiny back at home this weekend. But what were your initial thoughts of that performance of the Blues away from home in a place that, you know, traditionally is a really tough place to go and win?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, it's a really tough place. It's a really tough place to win. And I think with the confidence that the Reds had previously with that win and being back home in Brisbane, obviously they played in Townsville, but being back in Australia and Brisbane, it's a real hard place to play. You know, the kind of things that I took away from it is that, you know, the Blues forwards were really dominant in that performance. Like, I thought the likes of, you know, Epa, Tom and Tom Robinson and Dalton Papali'i were immense defensively. You know, Epa topped the tackle count with 20, Tom 14 and Dalton 17. And they really had that physicality and bringing in that defensive effort for the Blues, which I think is needed in those kind of big games. You need your forward to stand up. And then the efficiency of when they were inside the 22 and the control that Finlay Christie had with the forwards around running off him, having your forwards go and pick and goes and scoring tries when you were down that 22 was really efficient. And your set piece was good as well. So the kind of things that I've loved and what I've seen with the Blues and what's really been really impressive, we've talked around their game management and understanding of, you know, when to play and when not to play, but it's the ability of the forwards and the ability to play with the pivots. And it's not just OTD or your 10 or your 12 who's in that pivot position. You know, Mark Talia was in there on the weekend and scored off that pivot, you know, with those kind of behind balls and then going through. So I think the way they're marrying up their play with your forwards really performing well, who Tom Coventry obviously has a lot of work to do, and you're seeing that in the kind of collision area defensively and on the breakdown clean outs and how ruthless they are. And that's probably a word that you haven't probably heard with the Blues, but they look really ruthless and they look clear in their plan of what they want to do. So those are kind of the things that I've seen. And, you know, it's a tough place to get under the circumstances of what's on the line for the Blues. And so getting that win, doesn't matter how they got it, you know, and then probably the score blew out a little bit, but to make it a little bit close. But I thought, you know, they were the best team on that park. And probably the biggest moment there was that sin binning of the hooker. What's his name, Jip, the hooker of the Reds?
Brendan Paiangamosa.
Yeah, they scored 14 points when he was in the sin bin, so they were ruthless in that kind of scenario there. So they made them really pay with that yellow card due to, I think, your forwardship. You probably saw it as well, but I thought the forwards were outstanding on the weekend. I thought they set the benchmark of how they won that game against the Reds, set the tone really nicely.
Were you surprised, though, straight after that first yellow card, they sacked the next line out and they got a penalty? And Mike Fraser said, "You've just been yellow carded. You know, you're lucky you're not going to the bin again." I'm surprised that they didn't just get another yellow card.
Do you reckon? That's what I thought. I was like, "Oh, they're pretty lucky not to have two in the bin." So whether he thought, you know, doesn't want to ruin the spectacle of the game, or just thought a little bit lenient, and, you know, for the Reds, but Yeah, I think if they got another yellow card, you know, then that could have really opened up the floodgates. But yeah, I was surprised with that as well.
No, I just picked that up. But look, I agree with your points. And the one thing I took out of it is, you know, really key on the players you put. And I'll just let everyone know who Epa is. It's Jared Kelly Tuioti. Mm. And I'll use him as an example of the points that you made. Is his selfless decisions to create opportunities for others was the biggest thing that I liked. And Mark Talia's try is a great example. His line that he runs, and we've talked about it about the Crusaders in the past, is discipline to do his role to create space for someone else. And he runs off Paddy. Paddy gives that ball out the back to Mark, but his line that he runs, a hard line, commits the Queensland defender to rush in, which creates that space to open up for Mark as the pivot, as you call him, to run through that space and score. Same thing happened for Dalton's try when they're picking and going. Jared cleans in that last ruck and he takes two Queensland defenders in and around that corner and cleans a high ruck. And then they have to, the other guys of the Reds have to come right around. They don't do it in time, and then Dalton obviously picks with a latch on. It's four legs into two, and it's just you know, it's just too easy. But it's what the work that's done before by the other you know, six forwards that, you know, have got together and have done their jobs selflessly to create the space for Dalton to go over. And that was the story of the night for me. And as you said, you know, Christie's game, you know, his box kick game is improving. His, I feel like now he's got his match fitness, his whole game he's stringing together is really starting to gel with the forwards, but also the backs, and it's just complementing and that ability to have that ball up mindset. I think, you know, you're seeing, if he's not there, you're seeing the forwards play half back, or they're boosting through the middle of rucks. You know, there just seems to be a good synergy building now there's that consistency and that selection at nine.
Yeah, I think it is, mate. And I think it's just flown on his, you know, his effect from being at in the Tasman environment. And, you know, a lot of their players is based around very similar to the Crusader style, around box kicking, being able to build pressure through that. But then, again, with and it's no, as a halfback, when your forwards are on the go forward and giving you really good set piece ball or just good phase play ball, then the ability to be able to play off that is really, it's really easy to do. And so, you know, with the Blues being able to be so dominant and, you know, giving such a good platform for him, it's been able to have those little, like, you know, you've seen in their face play shape, you know, even close into the 22, you know, him getting out, playing a little bit, trying to entice the heart defense of the Reds, and then you've got runners outside him. And then go through. But then it's the ability to understand that, okay, we're actually going to bring all the forwards all in, get them all in together, and then, you know, you get the go-forward ball with pick and goes, scoring points like that as well. So his game management understanding has been really good. And so moving forward, especially, I mean, if they do play into a final, having a guy like that who understands the situations of game management when it comes into those games, it's only going to benefit the Blues moving forward. So it's going to be a great challenge. They've got the Brumbies on the weekend, so it'll be great to see how they hit on the weekend with that.
And then at set piece time, there's been another growth. You know, we look at Sam Whitelock and Scott Barrett over a number of years, but Jared Kelly Tuioti and Patrick Tuipulotu are getting some steals. Their five-man mirror D system, it led to a try. 41 minutes, I think it was, where is it here? I think 41 minutes, there was a steal. And then another steal at 42 minutes. And the steal at 42 minutes leads to a try in their lineout D. So their mirror system is starting to work. And we haven't quite seen that in the past. We probably haven't seen the bodies get in the air. But the work they're doing during the week, the prep work they're doing, they're starting to see the reward from it. And again, probably consistency and selection is starting, they're getting to, you know the feel. But, you know, back to those the selfless acts, it's probably a lot to do with the lifter. You know, Patrick will get the big raps and Gerard will get the big raps for getting the steal. But it's actually the men on the ground that have to do a lot of the hard work to get those steals. And now that they're getting those steals and they're leading to points, those are massive plays. Yep. The ability to do those are huge. So couple of growths on the other side of the ball I think that the Blues can be really proud of going into what is a big week. And, you know, you've just played the Force and, you know, they've just missed out against the Chiefs. They pushed the Highlanders really hard at home. Probably a bit of a slip-up against the Canes. They pushed you boys pretty hard, and if they'd taken some of their opportunities, could have been in a better spot. It's no given that the Blues can turn up at Eden Park and just get the job done against the Force.
Yeah, I think it is. We've talked around the Force. You know, they don't go away, and you know, even talking to the guys after, they want to build something. Want to build something there, and they want to base it around, you know, how hard they're working and that kind of underdog mentality. So. They have had a few injuries. I was talking to Richard Kahui, and they are a little bit underdone injury-wise with just how many injuries they've had. But, yeah, look, I think the greatest thing for the Blues is they've come back. So they had that great win in Brisbane, and now it's really time to just really put the nail in the coffin, really, if you think about it. They're going to be back at home, knowing that if they get a win, you know, they're in a final. They're probably in a final at home, you know, which will probably be massive for them. So they've got a lot to play with, and I think, you know, I think they've had enough learnings throughout probably the last in Leon's tenure to understand how big this game is. You know, they're expected to win against a Force team that hasn't won a lot, but like you said, they're a tough team that don't go away. So if you don't get your prep right, you don't get it right, you know, then they can have the ability to beat you. Like they put us close on the weekend. So now, but all those things that you've talked around, the growth that they've had, Jip, I think, you know, if they get that right coming on the weekend, you know, it sets them up to have a final at Eden Park, which Leon and that team will probably be wanting desperately, because it's going to be a great opportunity for them moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what they've done well is they've just focused week to week in this Trans-Tasman, and just about, you know, that almost finals mentality. Each game's just about nailing that and then on to the next. And I think if they can keep that standard of mindset and just nail off the Force and then take care of, you know, the final and finals week, that'll keep them in good stead, whether it's at home or wherever. You know, they'll be able to, you know, finish off what has been, you know, a great campaign so far. On the other end of the scale, after a pretty, you know, outstanding Super Rugby Aotearoa, the Chiefs have had a really hard draw, you know, with travel and, you know, going all over the place and then not getting the home fixture last week, having to move it over to Sydney, had a really hot start, and then, you know, a fight back from the Rebels, but coming away with a convincing victory in the end. What took my notice on the weekend was Quintipiah and Anton Leonard-Brown together. I mean, man, we know Anton's outstanding, but Quintipiah, you know, just if I use Caleb Trask's second try, he busts through the line off the scrum, he link play, you know, there's other aspects of his game where he's cleaning rucks, he bounces back up, he gets another touch, defensive reads. I don't know, I think this kid has got a massive future at the next level. But also, he seems to be getting a great relationship with Anton, where he just, you know, nothing against Alex Nankervell, because I thought Nankervell was great in his absence and, you know, warrants to still push for a start in the team. But, man, there's something about him. I don't know if you felt that, but every time he wears that 12 jersey for the Chiefs, he's entertaining to watch.
Yeah, he is. I was fortunate enough to spend a bit of time with him at the New Zealand Maldives last year, and, you know, had a lot of reps coming off him. If you think around that Waikato season before last year, had a really good Māori 10 Cup or Bunnings Cup NPC, and then came in probably last year at Super Rugby and was playing at centre, which he's usually a 12, talking to him when I was in camp and having a better understanding when he was a 12, but playing at that 13 probably was a little bit more defensively that he struggled a little bit. But I think with him going into 12, which is real, which is a better feel for him, and working with Anton, who's outside him, he's special. And I think before he got injured, you know, even in the Super Rugby Aotearoa, his form that he was having with Anton was massive, and it was probably, the injury came at probably a bad time, you know, because he was playing some really good footy, and he's abrasive, he's great in contact defensively, and when he does make tackles, he's really physical, and with the ball on hand, that's a massive attribute for him. You know, he's been through a lot of times in games due to running really nice lines or one-on-one, beating them with his footwork. So he's got that all-round ability, and just through time, you know, he's going to get better with that game management and understanding what it takes to be a 12. But I think he's a kid to watch for the future, and I think, you know, I'm glad you brought up Alex Nankervell, because I think in his absence, he's actually played some really good footy, some career-best form footy, and so it just adds depth to that. To that group, you know, you've got Anton, who's played a lot of, who's, you know, the incumbent All Black, you know, he's an All Black, and then you've got two guys that can play 12 and 13. But I think, you know, Quinn on the weekend, it just reminds you of how special this kid could be.
We obviously are big fans of Bryn Gatz, and I thought he had a great game on the weekend, especially that stand and deliver pass he gave to Chase Tiatia for his try. But how do you think his mate inside him went? Xavier Rowe, there's obviously a lot of talk about him, what he's shown through last year's Bunnings NPC, you know, first real big minutes game. He had, what, 50-odd minutes before Brad Weber came on?
Yep. No, I thought, you know, as a nine, you know, it's always nice to get on, especially if you're a young nine. And look, I thought Xavier was good on the weekend. You know, was nifty, was around the ball. You know, good distribution game. You know, even looking for that try when Anton Leonard Brown goes off the line out. You know, they give a bunter, gives it to Xavier, and he chucks a flat ball to, I think it was Sal Kula, and gives a great tip ball to Anton to score that try. So he had some really nice touches, and then, you know, obviously with Bryn, you know, being back in the saddle, I thought, you know, the last time he started in that final, you know, I thought he was probably one of the best on park. So getting that time again to have another opportunity. We've talked about him a lot around his distribution game. It's a massive plus for them. And look, when you've got a 10 that can distribute really, really well, it gives you plenty of players great opportunities to be able to play with ball in front. And his kicking game is a second to none. We've talked about that. So, no, I think they both played well together. And, you know, obviously Brad's there. He's played a lot of minutes, and he'll probably come back into the fold next week. But, you know, for Xavier, those kind of moments in there, those kind of times that you do have, especially at their level, it's only going to add to his game moving forward. So he'll get some opportunities probably in that Bunnings Minor Team Cup that he'll be able to perform a lot more and being able to have better understanding and how you evolve as a nine. And then obviously Bryn's coming back to North Harbour, which I'm pretty happy about.
Bet you are. Now, one area that you love at North Harbour, and I used to love when I was there, is a scrum. And one thing that confused me on the weekend is the bizarre nature of how scrum dominance seemed to chop and change. You know, the Chiefs were dominant one scrum, and then somehow on their own ball, on their own line, they get pushed off it, and the Rebels get a pushover try on opposition ball. I can't even remember that ever happening.
I can't either. I think you see that a lot in your junior. You see that a lot in your junior rugby, or, you know, but not at this level. But yeah, I think it's the difference. I think just the difference in scrummaging is a little bit different to our Kiwi teams. And so there's different techniques, and you probably have a better eye around why that might have happened. But even for us, I look at, like, on the weekend, even though we have a dominant scrum, you know, just before half time, we went for a tap and go a couple of times just to be able to not take that kind of decision away from the ref, because it's something different, and we're not probably getting the scrum penalties or the dominance that we want, that we usually do get when we do play New Zealand teams, because we all scrummage quite similar. So that's just an example for us. Cody taps that ball. We do it actually twice. We don't score the first time due to, I think, I actually knocked the ball on, sadly. Yeah. But then we go back to it again, and then we score off that. So to be able to have just different plans in place, because I think the interpretation and the different scrummaging of different Australian teams has definitely been a lot different. I don't know if you've probably seen that, Jip, but for us, you know, we've had times where we've just tapped the ball because we want to take it out of the ref's hands.
I think you only knocked it on because those clumsy forwards' boots are everywhere, mate. but no, I know what you mean. Sometimes it's different, and then it becomes 50-50. You don't want to get into it. But I was just surprised that, you know, the Chiefs had that dominance, and then at a time where you're hard on your line, and it almost screamed of maybe a mindset of just expecting things to happen, and the Rebels came back at them. And I suppose the Rebels' ability to fight back was probably the most impressive. And, you know, Nisa Larry was huge. and he sort of fell out of favour at international level, but his performance on the weekend, you know, his picks through the middle, he got a couple of tries. One was that pushover scrum, but the other was a big, strong, tough carry. Defensively, he was good. You know, Matt Tamua was another big performer. Joe Powell, there were a few others. I think, you know, I watched their body language after Anton Leonard-Brown's second try, and they were just disjointed, almost looking around at each other for an answer. And I thought, wow, they're in trouble here. And then they were huddling underneath the sticks, and I thought, oh, well, that's better. But then they slowly walked back halfway, and I thought, oh, this is gonna blow out. But they kicked off, and Kotabeti chased well and forced an error. And from that scrum, they eventually got that pushover scrum, and it managed to turn the tide. And they gave a reasonable account of themselves in the end. Mentioning a couple of those players, Dave Rennie was in the crowd, and he came out publicly and mentioned a few guys that have played well, a few positions, you know, hooker and second rower that are open and up for grabs, but he feels like the spine is settled in terms of for the Wallabies in the French series. What are your initial thoughts on, I mean, one, the performance of that game, you know, of the Rebels, and then any other sort of key performers throughout the Trans-Tasman, even though it's been a bit one-sided, how you think, you know, Dave Rennie's seen it from a Wallabies point of view?
Yeah, I think the guys you have talked about at the Rebels, you know, they're probably the most experienced guys in that squad. And look, as a halfback, Joe Powell, he's played test footy, and, you know, I've done a bit of, well, obviously we're playing him this week, so the best attribute that he has is when they do have good go forward ball. You know, actually with most Australian nines, they do play a lot off nine, so they do have a lot of rovers and then picking and playing a lot. So, you know, when he does get that platform, that's when the Rebels are at their best, and, you know, that comes back to winning collisions and giving him the opportunity to do that, because when they have given him that kind of ball, he's actually been really great around his running game and putting players into space and playing at high tempo for the Rebels team, and that's when they've looked at their best. You know, Matt Tamua is he's a proven performer where he's played a lot of rugby and has a pretty good understanding around rugby and what's needed. So, you know, he's probably in a team where he's probably taken a lot on defensively and on attack. So I think it would actually be nice when he does go into that Australian level, into that club, into that game series. You know, he'll probably be around players that are going to be of similar kind of calibre to him. But, you know, one guy that's really has just continued to be great in this, he plays for the Reds, Harry Wilson. And, Jip, you've talked about him. We talked to him a lot in that kind of Australian Rugby Championship last year around how great he was. And he's a young fella, but, you know, on the weekend, and these are pretty similar stats around what he's doing every single week. He had 73 metres of carries, 6 defenders, 3 clean breaks, 3 offloads, and 14 passes and 13 tackles. So he's doing some immense work, which is world-class and right up there. And the things that I do like, you know, it's 14 passes and 13 tackles. So he's got a whole game that he's got based around him, running defensively, and, you know, that attacking ability as well. So he's one guy that's really, really stood up for me. And we talked about him last week with the Waratahs. Isaiah, what's his name, Jip?
Parisi.
Yeah, he's been a guy that's been very, very impressive. And I know they've had Paisami and Jordan Pataia's been there. But he's a guy that might slip in there just through his performances and his physicality, what he brings. So those are probably the two guys that I've seen outside the Rebels that I think have really stood up in this competition. But you might have a couple more that you've probably seen as well, Jip.
I'll jump on the back of Wilson, because the biggest thing that I like about his game is that he's grown it. You know, last year we would have seen, I'd say, two passes, and a lot of it would have just been tough, hard carries. You know, his carry stats were, you know, most games were up around 15, 16. Yeah. And he's just really added those finesse touches, you know, giving tip balls or giving out the back passes or even, you know, long balls. So it becomes he's more of a threat, because you've got to be wary of his ability to give the ball now, not just the carry. And he went through, you know, a nice tip ball on the weekend. Whether it was forward or not, it doesn't matter. He ran a great line, saw the separation between Dalton and Paddy and took it and scored a great try. So I like that he's had taste of international rugby and hasn't stayed, you know, in one zone. He's really developed his game and taken it to another level, and he'll be better for it when he represents the Wallabies again. Peresi, the same. Like, I've really, you know, sat up and taken notice after his performance against you guys. And what I liked about Dave Rennie's comments is, yeah, we knew he had talent, but he hadn't actually played that much rugby. And now he's starting to play really well. We wanted him to earn his spot in the Wallabies camp. We're not just going to give it. And I think that's a nice element to set the tone for the Wallabies from a head coach, is to say, we're not just going to invite all and sundry to these camps or teams or squads. You've got to earn to be here. Like, there's no doubt that he's going to be a Wallaby and belongs there, but he's had to earn his way there, and there's no doubt that he'll be selected as an Isaiah Peresi. And there's a number of other ones around there that are performing really well, but I think those two, as you said, are two that have you know, stood out for me as well. It's going to be, I think that Dave Rennie will be able to put a really strong team together, and I think there has been some really strong individual performances. You know, I think another guy that will be key to them, and I think was a big difference once he came on for the Brumbies, was Nick White. You know, I know Ikki Tau scored that sort of individual try, but it was his ability to in and around and run around that ruck that just sort of sucks defenders and makes you sort of stand up as a forward in particular, and you sort of overchase him, which just gives other guys opportunity. Jake Gordon as well. I know the Waratahs have been struggling, but he's another guy that has had a fairly good trans-Tasman. He was a bit injured through AU, but two guys that are key at setting, you know, standards in their environments are pretty key around that nine area.
Yeah, I agree. I think Jake Gordon, you know, obviously he's had a tough season with, obviously, performances-wise around collectively as a team and not getting wins. But, yeah, so, yeah, when you've got depth around Nick White, Jake Gordon, and then you've also got Tate McDurbin as well, who has been in and around that environment as well, who adds something different. So they do have a lot of difference makers in that position. And so, you know, probably three of those guys will be selected, and then, you know, depending how they want to play. But I think Nick White will probably get the nudge on that, but they have got a lot of depth with Jake Gordon, who's a great running nine, and then you've got Tate McDermott as well, who kind of is a little bit smaller and a little bit more niftier, and is kind of similar to that kind of Aaron Smith kind of feel. So they do have a lot of depth in there, different types of players as well. So it's always great to have a bit of difference in your positions when making team selections.
One more guy as well. I think we've got to talk about the pack, because that's where it all matters. Is the young lock from the Rebels is Trevor Leota. I don't know if you've noticed him, Bryn, but he's a strong carrier. He's a big defender. He's a big body. He's a young man, and he's had big reps on him, but he's put in some big shifts as well. He was really good on the weekend. I'm sure you'll probably get to know him personally this weekend. Yeah. but I just think, you know, second row is an area that Dave Rennie said they're a bit light on. Dave Rennie's really like Caden Neville, but he's picked up an injury, so might not get the opportunity against France. But Trevor Leota is a young man, certainly on the rise, and will get hopefully a good run at international level, but is one to watch. And I look forward to talking to you next week to see if you've crossed paths this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably get a little bit more insight with him coming up when we play him on the week.
Another international team was named on the weekend, or just named, I think it was on the weekend, or maybe late last week, was the Springboks team to play the Lions. Your initial thoughts on that one?
Yeah, it's a good squad. I think it's an experienced squad, and I think the words that we use in the media around is they've gone with the tried and true, but, you know, they've got eight new caps, which is always good to see new captain get an opportunity. But that's a pretty settled squad. I think with with obviously Morning Stain coming back as well, adds a bit of experience. And so he'll add depth to Pollard and Yanchies. So it's always good to have him back. But yeah, I think it's a pretty settled squad, Jip. I think they've got a lot of experience in their loose forward trio and their midfielders as well. They've got a lot of test caps in that kind of area. So it's predominantly pretty strong around those areas. But yeah, I think it's a pretty settled squad. And so I think South African fans will be pretty happy around that. And so we did talk about whether they were going to have an experienced squad, the guys that were proven that won the World Cup. And they have shown a lot of loyalty to a lot of those guys. But they have got a lot of they've got 8 new caps as well who have been given an opportunity due to their form in the Premiership. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty good.
I think they've chosen a squad from all over the globe, I suppose, different parts of the team. But we had Ben Darwin on here speaking of, having that cohesion factor. And it was interesting to hear Erasmus talk about, the World Cup cohesion and guys that have, they know each other really well. They know the style of play really well. But also he particularly honed in on Sale Sharks and how there were a couple of players in there that he's brought in because of their time they've spent with Faf de Klerk and how they know how he plays and how they regularly play with him, and they've got a good understanding with him. And I just thought that was interesting. But on the back of our chat with Ben Darwin and having that cohesion and familiarity with Faf, and it just shows, one, he's clearly going to be a key part of the South African game plan, but two, that it clearly is a big factor in their squad selection, is that cohesion and squad connection in terms of being able to come together, because they haven't played Test rugby for so long, that he wants a group that knows each other, knows how to play and knows how to come together quickly, and that they can perform at a high level off a short run up, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I think that's the kind of direction they had to go in. I think, look, when you haven't played for 20-odd months, cohesion and familiarity is pretty key when you don't have that time together. So, there's obviously a new cap, Sinele Nohomba, who obviously plays at the Sale Sharks. So, not the Sale Sharks, sorry, no, he's not, obviously doesn't play for Sale Sharks, but he's a new halfback as well that's been selected in the squad. So, I think for familiarity and getting an understanding as much as you can, especially in a short time, it's really important. And so it's no different from the Lions. They're in short preparations and they've got four different countries they have to come together. But I think the more familiarity that you can have and understanding around how you do play and certain players do play, it's probably the best way for you to perform. At the next level, they do have a test series against Georgia and then they're right into it. So people that understand how they do play and familiarity is probably the most important thing moving forward when you've got such a short window to prepare as well.
I think also like a couple of key selections picking it out of the squad is Morne Steyn and France Steyn in terms of experience, and a little bit older these guys, but as we know, players like that almost become extra coaches in the environment and so vital to have around in terms of helping out coaches, but also the group throughout the week, but also the big moments and test matches. Lions test series are normally tight, and having the ability of these guys to come on that can kick long range penalties, maybe potentially coming off the bench and understanding pressure moments and having a cool, calm head. And they're both confident guys with the boot, but also confident guys in their game. They know how they play. They've got a certain style. Everyone around them knows how they play, and they've done it for so long. So everyone's confident around them because they're just like, yeah, they've got it. And I think that those are quite key selections to provide confidence throughout the squad as well.
Yeah, it is, absolutely, and it's warranted on form as well. But I think, yeah, any time you can get a guy that's that experience, Steyn, a Francois Steyn, and obviously a Morne Steyn, it only gives you confidence within your group. So you've got Yanchies and Pollard, who've been there probably the last 3-4 years. But anytime you can bring a guy that's experienced big moments and give them, you know, it might just be a conversation throughout the week that, you know, Pollard or Yanchis might want to need to hear, or someone in the backline or whoever it may be. And having a caliber of player that has a pretty good understanding around big moments and big games and what it takes, I think you can't buy those kind of traits. And I look at our team, you know, a guy that did massive for us who didn't play a lot, Tim Bateman, the confidence that he gave our group throughout the week because due to his preparation and just his communication around certain things and talking around a game and stuff that he sees, it was so beneficial for us when he was there. So having those kind of guys around, I mean, they're probably going to possibly play as well. But, you know, you can't buy experience and you can't buy guys that have had massive moments and been able to give it to those young players coming through, especially like a Lions series where there's so much pressure and the margin of error usually in Lions series is so small. And if you've got guys like that who have a good understanding can help you through that, they're worth their weight in gold.
Yeah, well, I think also, you know, I hate to say it and touch wood it doesn't happen, but, you know, you look at the World Cup for the All Blacks and when we dropped a lot of 10s, you know, it's also the injury factor, having guys of that experience throughout. And it's not just in that 10s area. It's in the loose forwards. It's in the locks. It's, you know, everywhere they've got some really sound experience. And as you said, there's a bit of new caps, you know, a bit of excitement and energy because you need that as well. You need that, yep. You know, fresh excitement energy every week in the training field just to, you know, get the old dogs up as well, that you know, keep them on notice. So I think it's a good balance. There's certainly enough players, 46 of them. That's a big squad. But I think that's necessary as well so that they can have a good hit out during the week. So all in all, pretty exciting. I think we've covered it all there, Brynner. So I think we'll wrap up. So that's us for this week. Thanks for joining us here at the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. And thank you, Bryn Hall, down south. And thank you guys at home. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.